Jonathan hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo. This is a bit of a cut down preview this week because old Kyle's had a sunny day on a beach in the middle of Manila, making himself feel good, and we're sat here slaving away in a hot bloody studio at 25 degrees outside when we should be out taking photos, which you should be as well if you're watching us live. But never mind, eh? I'm joined by Alex Fox, the usual suspect who helps me out. How you doing, mate?
I'm very good, thank you very much. It's quite cool here today. I mean,
it's bloody horrible, anyway. Right? It's stinking hot. I've got lights on galore. I didn't think this out very well. I needed air conditioning. Subtle, quiet air conditioning needs to be bought. Any donations?
I'll take the roof off.
How's the week gone?
It's been good. I've spent a lot of it playing with the boys, doing no work at all. And the odd day I have worked, I've worked very hard and very productively. So it's worked out exactly as I would have hoped.
Jolly good.
Yourself?
The week in photography news. Well, I'm all right. I've had a very pleasant week. I've done a lot of work, but I've also had a day out with the family, which we definitely needed. So, and I shot in RAW.
Very good.
Because it was too light, and I was getting loads and loads of blowout. So I thought, no, stuff it shooting RAW.
We'll make a photographer out of you yet.
Maybe. Must try harder. The week in photography news has been pretty crap, as usual. We don't expect an awful lot more. First big story is that Canon and Nikon are saying that there could be a DSLR shortage, and it may affect prices long term. Any excuse to put a few quid on the top of something that's already overpriced, eh?
Yeah, well, the trouble is, what they're talking about isn't a few quid.
No.
It's a, sort of a few percent, like 10. Personally, right now, I'm in for a new camera. I've had some issues during the week, and I've got fed up trying to get things repaired and this and the other. And I've sort of been looking around for cameras, and there is a big shortage. Top-end cameras, there's a big shortage. You can get the prosumer range and a bit lower because of they're not made in Japan. But Japan's... The plants that have been affected are their high-end plants. So both Nikon and Canon really have a big issue with supplying parts for the high-end parts. But also, if you remember, you know, they don't make all the parts for every camera. So just because maybe Nikon has gone back to work in their main factory, they're not getting supplied with the bits they need to put into the top-end cameras.
So what are you in for then at the minute? What are you thinking of buying?
I was looking at going to buy a new top end Nikon, and I was sort of tentatively thinking I might update my medium format digital as well. No one is offering me very good deals on anything at the moment, because whereas I can normally get 10% off everything, I'm having a real trouble getting anything. So let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah. So they could be talking like 10%. So the new Nikons that we looked at last week, that could probably add another 60 or 70 quid to the price. If you're talking about a top-end camera, you could be talking about 250 quid or more on the top end of that. So 1DS Mark III, I think, is currently retailing at 5,005. So that's taking it right the way up to £6,000 as a camera, which is a huge outlay.
Yeah,
I remember when I bought mine was 6,500 at the time, and it was I'm gonna have to pay this is gonna have to pay for itself over 3 to 4 years, not instant return. So that's a huge amount.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, the new cameras just probably won't be released. The thing that I've been waiting for, like the D800, I don't know when that's coming out now. It should have been released, but it may not be released for another 3 months.
Hello, Tony in the chat room. Nice of you to join us, mate. Thank you. Well, we'll have to wait and see. At the moment, there's definitely shortages of the D3S, the D3X, and the D700. And there's also shortages on Canon stock of the 7D, the L series lenses, which is the pro-end stuff, the orange, the beigey kind of ones, and the EOS 5 Mark II. Warehouse Express says that a supply is way, way down, and they're hoping that some will be coming through soon, but there's no other comment about it at the moment. So it could be pretty... It could be a while before you get anything through. And the prices, I can't believe that people are so desperate that the prices need to go up, but we'll have to see. Any excuse to put money on the top. You've picked, or I've picked a story about iPhone 4 has gone past a lot of cameras to be near the top of the Flickr charts at the moment. So Flickr uploads, generally speaking, Nikon D90 of the prosumer range is the top uploader to Flickr and still is at the moment. Then it was the Canon, then the Canon Digital Rebel XSI, so that's the 55 over here, 550 over here, sorry. The EOS 5D Mark II was the next one down, and then finally the Rebel T1i was the last one. But the iPhone has leapt into second place, and in the last 3 months, it now accounts for the second largest camera for upload to Flickr. Surprised?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm sort of quite pleased, because to me, what it's saying, and the figures don't break down well enough to prove it, that it's a new set of people making the most of having the camera in their pocket with the instant ability to upload it. I don't think it's the people that used to use the Canons and the Nikons that are dropping out of using them. I think it's just people that are new to sticking things on Flickr.
I mean, if you took the Instagram kind of uploads and those kind of services as well, YFrog and all those kind of stuff, you'd probably find that the iPhone is probably well at the top of most of the data that's actually going up online with photographs now.
Yeah, I mean, it proves the fact that if you put a decent camera into a decent phone and get enough people out there, they will use it for what it's intended for.
Day like today, I would suggest that you go out with your iPhone 4 and leave the compact camera at home. You'll do really good results, because it's bright, it's sunny, it's clear. It'll do very, very well in this kind of light. But if you're thinking about it on a day that's not quite so clear and vibrant, then maybe your compact is the one to go with. But iPhone certainly got good enough lens for today.
It'd be interesting to see the quality of the images. Are all the outside images, are people still putting up images that aren't very good? So I would suggest that if you were using a Nikon or a Canon, you'd look at the image, obviously, because it's not an instant upload. You'd look at the image and say, no, that's not really good enough, I won't bother sending it. But if you're on an iPhone, and especially if you're taking something indoors, would you just press send anyway? So there may be a lot more pictures going up, and there may be a lot more pictures coming from the iPhone, but has it sort of lessened the quality of the images that are available to be looked at? That's my, not so much of a concern, but it would just be interesting to know.
I mean, Sarah's in the chat room saying she's just thinking about taking away the Nexus S with her, whether to take a separate camera or not. I think definitely take a separate camera. There's no way these cameras are good enough to substitute for a decent compact. But, you know, if you're going out today, you'll get some great images. If you just want spur-of-the-moment stuff, I'd say take your cell phone camera if it's got good quality. But I wouldn't go on a holiday with it, for sure.
No, I mean, the only issue, and it will remain an issue till someone cracks it, is an inbuilt digital zoom. Analog zoom. Once they've managed to do that, then you won't need to take a separate camera. But at the moment, framing a picture, you really do need the ability to zoom in and zoom out. So, especially when you're on holiday. You know, I mean, if you're trying to take a scenery shot or a skyline shot, you can't really cut out the stuff you don't want unless you can zoom in slightly.
Well, the other thing that's happened this week with photography using the iPhone and the iPad is that iFi have updated their software so that you can now stream from your camera straight to your iPod or iPhone for storage. Now, I think that's a huge leap forward. And I've got to say, I requested that about 6 months ago, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I have no idea why you can't go from iFi direct to iPad. Well, now you can. Is that pushing people? I mean, have you got an iFi? I remember I bought one while you were online. We were talking about it, but I don't know whether you bought one or not.
No, because at the moment, the iFi is only SD card. And the cameras that I've got that take SD cards, I don't use. I'd have to go and fish out another camera just so I could put an iFi.
See, well, that's where you need to go to Canon, because mine takes both.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, I've got a dual one, but they take dual compact flash.
No, mine take dual one SD, one compact flash, and it streams direct very well to my MacBook. So now that I can set it up for going to my iPad, I am seriously happy, because it means I can shoot on the fly, I can store there, store on the card, and I can show instant results to customers, which is brilliant.
Yeah, I mean the wireless tethering system for Nikon is lots of hundreds into the thousands of pounds. Now you've basically got the same thing for, what's it, £40.
Yeah, I mean, the card cost me about 80, and I think the software is only $1.99 or something like $2.99. So okay, I'm very happy.
Even if you don't store on the Wi-Fi card, you've got a wireless tethering.
I don't think you get a choice to switch the Wi-Fi the card off. I think
I'm saying if you're not worried about the storage.
It's over buffer then at that point. When it stops storing it, then just keeps throwing it to the storage device over the Wi-Fi. You can't record any more to the card once it's full, though.
Is it wireless in?
I don't know. I'll check.
Okay.
We'll have to check before the end of the show. I think it is. Last bit on iPhone as a camera then is to look at the one that you picked up, the Rolly 8x zoom for your iPhone. Now this thing's a very big long lens that's in a pro form, so you can actually fit it straight into the camera. You're not worried about dodgy old links at the far end, but this thing's a big zoom, 8x zoom optical for the iPhone. Now you pick this one. Why on earth would you want this thing?
Well, I thought I picked it really to ask the same question. Why on earth would you want this thing? It's not a good enough camera to warrant spending the time or money to put a lens on the front. And for the price of the lens, you can go and get an awful lot better compact camera. But it's just interesting to see that people are putting enough effort into thinking that maybe this iPhone incarnation rather might not be good enough to do it, but maybe the next one will. And these things are all going to be retrospective, aren't they? You're always going to be able to fit it onto the next phone or have a name for making the lenses. So be interesting.
The big suggestion is that the iPhone 5 is going to be the same form factor as the 4. It won't be any thinner, it won't be any larger. So if you buy this, there's a good chance, from what the rumours are saying, that your 5's going to fit straight into it as well. So as you say, if you get the better camera, then that's really, really good. The other thing that was nice about this was, the f-stop settings at 1.1, which is nice, and also it's got a tripod attachment to it, so you can mount it on a mini tripod or even on your full tripod.
Yeah.
And shoot with it, which are quite why you'd want to do that. I'm not entirely sure,
what's
take
interesting.
Out a 40 kilo tripod just so that you can shoot with
it. Yeah, it would be a bit much. But, this obviously will work with video as well.
Mm.
And, so we'll say the next iPhone, I'll be surprised if it isn't 1080p.
Yeah, well, the only thing I'd say with that is that Apple seem to have settled on 720p. All of the HD stuff that you stream down to iTunes is 720. The Apple TV only goes up to 720, won't stream any higher than that, won't play any higher than that. So I'm not sure that Apple are going to go to 1080. That would be an interesting question, an interesting leap forwards if they do.
Is it not just a firmware or software upgrade to go to 720 on their hardware?
If it's optical gathering, then yeah, you would have thought so, unless the sensor's got to be changed.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the Apple TV and the iTunes, it's a flick of a switch and then it will be able to handle 1080p.
Oh, maybe it's got HDMI in the back, so there's no reason it can't take a 1080p signal, no?
Yeah, so maybe they aren't going to allow anything to stream 1080 till they are producing the hardware to produce it. Maybe they're holding it back for that reason, that's my point.
What's interesting as well with this is that the price of it, it's €34, so that's going to come in at about £30. For £30, I'd have a play with it, wouldn't you?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? For £30, it'd be worth, leave it. It's one of those things to leave in the dashboard of your car.
If you're going out on a day out and you've got this in the, the thing is as well that's really difficult to carry it around is it's an L shape and it's a fixed L shape with a very weak point at where the connection is to the main part of the body. So it's not storage friendly, but for £30, I'd take it out and have a play with it and see what could go on. And one of the things that I did this week as well was I went on one of the roller coaster rides at the park that we went to, and I videoed the whole thing, some images of us before we went up and some Ellis talking to camera, and then I videoed the whole ride while we were going round using the iPhone, and it was absolutely great footage, really, really good, really vibrant, really alive. I would never have done that carrying a proper camera, a proper video camera.
But, it could keep up with the frame rate, etc.
It did okay. It was fine. I'm going to make a little video out of it, and I might shove it on YouTube if it's decent at the end. But it was all right. The only problem you had is just like holding on for a grim death. You couldn't see what you were actually shooting. I didn't want to lose my phone.
No, that's probably best.
And the last bit, really, of of, again, iPhone stuff on top of that is that Red Giant Software has given out a whole load of filters and so on that you can use. They've got a thing called Plastic Bullet, which makes the photo look like it was shot on a plastic camera. Why on earth you'd want that, I don't know. But they've got one called Movie Looks as well, which is $2.99, and Noir as well, which is a vignetting process, which is nice. And some of the results from those I've seen are pretty good. So if you're shooting at decent resolution in iPhone, these might be nice little additions, no?
Yeah, I mean, it ties in very well to the first, you know, topic about Flickr. If you're going to do all your onboard processing, well, basically, if you're going to take the photo on your iPhone and not remove it to anywhere else before you load it up to Flickr, well, it's worth being able to do some onboard tweaking before you send it to Flickr.
Mm.
So for that reason, and looking at the figures at Flickr saying that, you know, very soon the majority of people are going to go straight from their phone straight to Flickr, then yes, these are a good idea, because otherwise you're not going to get any inventive photography. You're only going to get bog standard shots off of your iPhone. So yeah, the more the merrier. It's just a lot of these things are, maybe they should wait and bundle them into sort of a one-stop shop package for photo filters, because at the moment you probably have 30 different apps all doing slightly different things, you know, including Photoshop. So, you know, that's my only worry.
Chat room's just saying that they've lost the photo stream, but we're all okay at this end, it would seem. So we'll carry on.
Yeah, I can see. And
the last one is the Toshiba Waterproof Camellio. It's a 1080p video camera that does 5 megapixel stills, and it's $150. And this thing's submersible. We're not talking splash proof. You can actually take this thing completely underwater. I like the idea of this. I think it's really cool. I'd love to give that to Ellis for $150. You know, we talked about the demise of the Flip last week.
Exactly.
Well, this thing's shooting 1080 and shooting stills as well, which is what the Flip really needs to do to survive. I'd dump £100 out of this.
Yeah, I mean, I took the trouble to look at it, and you know, this isn't really our normal area of expertise, these, you know, the small video cameras. But one of the things I did notice is a lot of people were saying, but there's other things on the market already that do it just as well and, you know, slightly cheaper. But I looked at the specs of this thing and I was thinking, you know what, especially, I mean, remembering if something's waterproof, it's going to be sandproof, it's going to be all those other proofs as well. So if you sort of give this to your child on the beach, etc., other than them burying it, there's very little that they can do to damage it. And nobody's queried the actual image quality. So I would say, lovely. Again, I wish people would put an optical zoom in these things. But, you know, this seems to be a very good attempt at the next level of, you know, the Flip-style cameras.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a heavy rubberized coating around the outside, which is what gives it its waterproofness. And if you gaffer taped it to his hand, you haven't got to worry about him losing it then at that point, or used a, you know, drawstring to give it to him then. He's going to go some to actually be able to damage this thing. So I think it's a great buy at that price. And like I said, the stills is the thing that sells me on it, because, you know, I don't know a lot about video. I don't shoot great video. I'm not a lover of video, but occasionally I want to do it. But I want my stills capability as well. And if this is a decent 5 megapixel camera, and again, they haven't gone mad with the sensor, have they? So there's a good chance it might actually be quite good. If you go to Toshiba's site, they'll bounce you through to where you can buy it with your local suppliers. And it's available today with a $20 rebate in some places, apparently, which is rather nice.
The time of year we're coming into, this is just one other thing to, you know, say to the listeners. All cameras, unless they are specially designed to, are very susceptible to all sorts of damage. You know, in the old days when you bought a film camera, other than actually, you know, knocking the back open when you dropped it, it wasn't that easy to damage the thing. You know, it wouldn't drop it down the stairs, but you'd probably get away with the odd knock. With the more modern digital cameras, they don't take very much damage, especially the compacts. If you give the zoom lens a tiny little tap when it's out, you may as well throw the camera away on a lot of cases.
May not go back in.
Exactly. So these family days out on the beach, and, you know, this sort of thing, if you were on a roller coaster, you dropped it. Other than if you dropped it off the top of the roller coaster and it went down 150 feet, you'd probably just pick it up at the end of the ride and you'd be perfectly okay. So it's always worth remembering that these things are very family friendly.
The lack of moving parts is definitely child friendly.
Exactly.
Shall we do some questions?
Please do.
Hi, Ewan, Alex and Kyle. I've been taking some shot recently of my kids and tried to capture some motion within the image. While I've managed to get varying results, there are some images which I like, but I'd like to add more movement within them. I've used motion blur in Photoshop Elements, but never got any great results. Is there something I'm missing in order to do better? Have you got any tips? Liam, in Newark, in Nottinghamshire.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start us off?
Well... with things like motion blur, there, you know, there are various things you can do in Photoshop. I don't particularly like doing them, though, I've got to be honest. I would say with something like motion blur, get it right when you take the photograph, and there tends to be a speed issue of when you photograph it. You can sort of tweak motion blur, but one of the troubles is if you've got something that's already got a tiny bit of motion blur, it's very, very hard to try and match it when you do it artificially afterwards. You're better off having something that's fired quick enough to have no motion blur at all, then do some masking and some blurring. If you try and add to something that has already got blur, it doesn't really work. So I would say either do one or the other. Make sure you get the blur right when you shoot it, or have no blur at all, and then manually do it. Don't try to put the two things together, because I can't get it to work.
No, I think you're ever going to get great results doing that. I agree. I think the thing is if you're getting varying results, the chances are you're letting the camera choose what it wants to shoot. So you're obviously shooting on the auto setting or the program setting. Always take an exposure priority here. So you're going for probably about a 60th of a second if you've got kids running around. You're definitely going to get motion in that. If you want to go any lower than that, then that'll be great. You'll get fantastic movement in the image, but do watch out for camera shake. Only shoot off a monopod or leaning on a bench or something like that to make sure that the camera stays still. But about a 60th is where you want to be, because that's kind of the area where you can hold it still enough with the hand, but you'll still grab the motion of the kids. And as Alex says there, shoot first rather than trying to fix later, because it's always, never shoot for Photoshop. It's a big mistake. If you have got something, one thing that I've done with motion blur is create vignettes of motion. So if you think about the way that generally images blur through depth of field, you'll get a gradual change of blur across through the image, from the front subject being sharp, and then it gets a little bit more blurred, a little bit more blurred, a little bit more blurred, and then you get to the full back, which is completely blurred. So you've probably got four stages there where you're going through a change in depth of field. Do the same with your motion blur. Create vignettes around an area with heavy amounts of feathering. So that's where you're choosing like a 20 to a 60 pixel feather or something, and then build up layers of blur through the motion, and you'll get a lot better results. And do bear in mind that it never looks natural.
No, it doesn't.
Shoot it rather than fix it. It's definitely the maxim of the day. Question two. Hi, guys. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Daniel. I want to take pictures inside which don't look like they've been shot with a flash, e.g. people with a window in the background. Unfortunately, I keep getting the balance wrong, and the person is always very dark in comparison to the light from the window. Have you got any suggestions on camera settings or setup to allow me to get what I want? Daniel Cobman, Canvey Island. Call by me, Gov.
Exactly. Oil refiner. Yeah, it's an old age-old problem. You can only help, various settings if you've got a control of all the, all that's going on. You can't control how much daylight's coming in unless you shoot it at night. You don't necessarily need to shoot with flash inside, but I would use some sort of artificial lighting, because there is a very large difference between the light coming through the window and the light source inside the room. So you can spot light, or gradually light the front of the subject. But the only way to balance the two light sources is to get the amount of light closer to each other. Unless you can turn down the daylight, e.g. shoot it later in the day, there's very little you can do. If you do expose for the foreground, the person inside, then the window will be so bright it's going to completely, overall the whole picture. And as you say, if you take the exposure from the highest point, which is the light coming in the background, you're going to get a virtually black image of the foreground.
The key is to stop the camera metering, really, isn't it? Because the camera won't do a great job unless it's got a fill flash setting built into it.
Well, that's the thing, but, you know, it says to not look like flash. You can use a fill flash, which, you know, it is the right way to do it. But if you don't want any flash, I mean, the only thing I'd say is if you flash directly from in front of the person you're trying to shoot, the light in the background, if you've got enough light in the background, you're not going to get any shadow from that flash anyway. Mm. So it's not going to really show up as if there's flash. If you're shooting with an onboard flash, then you're going to have more of an issue because you're going to get very high contrasty lines. So use a separate flash or a separate light source, not onboard the camera from the front, and you shouldn't have any shadow issues at all. Not if the background is as light as a window coming in.
I think one of the other things you've got to watch out for, Daniel, is colour temperature as well of the lighting that you want to use. So if you're using something that's artificial inside to highlight the person and balance it against the window, you're naturally going to have an awful lot of yellow in that to contrast very heavily to the blue light that's behind you coming through the window. So your colour temperatures could be a real issue. Definitely shoot in RAW there. And the other thing is to shoot in RAW full stop and use the highlight facilities that you've got in most of your bridge settings, and that kind of thing would help you out. But artificial light is going to be required at the front. I would use a flash and just try and, if you can, if you've got through the lens metering, you'll be able to manually change your flash so that you can take it back a few settings, a few stops, just to get a little bit less power out of it. And of course, because flash is so sharp at tungsten, or so harsh at tungsten, you're going to match it in colour temperature terms to what's coming through the window light far easier.
Yeah, well, also remembering, you, if you do have Photoshop, I don't know if Elements has it, there is a shadow and highlight.
I think it has. I think 8's got it.
Okay, no, there is a shadow and highlight, but I personally don't like it. I find it very artificial.
Well, it's kind of moving towards the HDR kind of look of things, isn't it, as well? And the other thing that you've got to watch out for is if you've got areas that are very dark in your image, Daniel, once you start to boost the light in them, by nature they become grainy. So that they'll look rough to start with. The key is, we keep saying it, shoot. Don't shoot for Photoshop. Shoot for the image that you want. So add light before you take the image. And bear in mind as well that the closer the light is to the person, then the more shadows and features you're going to get, whereas you want to come away if you want a softer kind of look to it.
There is one more thing I was just thinking, which is something that we talk about in our cheap fingers sometimes. If the light is behind the person and it's coming into the room towards you, then build a reflecting box or sheets of paper or, you know,
white sheet,
tin foil, and put it in front of the person reflecting back onto them, because then you will be reflecting some of the light from the window back into the subject's face.
Yeah.
So that will help a bit, but not as much as getting it right in the first place.
Last question. Hi, guys. I'm sure this question's been asked before, but I have a Sigma 70-300 lens and have noticed that when I'm at full zoom, the image is a little blurred. I took the lens back to the store and complained that this was happening and was told that it's normal issue with zoom lenses. Is that right? Is there anything I can do to stop it?
Right. Well, the short answer is yes, it is right. The longer the lens you've got, the softer the end, the longest part of the focus will be. If you really want to shoot something at 300, buy a 400mm lens.
Yeah. Generally speaking, you talk about a quarter of a turn, aren't you, which is probably going to be
250
or something. One quarter of your total zoom, so capacity. So you're going to wipe off at least probably about 100mm. You get about 200mm of sharpness, if you like, out of a 300mm lens.
Again, you can use rings, etc.
I was going to say extenders is another way of getting a higher zoom value but still keeping your sharpness. So if you put a 2x extender on it, you'll get up to 400mm probably. That's really quite sharp, and then that's going to start blurring out again. But with that problem, then you're going to start thinking about if it's the Sigma does 4.5 to 6.3, I think, on the f-stop setting. So when you put a 2x converter on, that value is going to instantly add 2 stops. So you're talking about it being quite a dark image. You'll have to have a very bright day, and also you'd be pushed back into manual focus at that point. You might have to do it automatically. So
yeah, I mean, it's still a, you know, if you buy a £10,000 lens, it's still a bit soft at the end. But you know, Sigma 70-300 is, shall we say, the lower end of the budget market.
It's a £70 lens, so you know.
But, you know, I would have said a 70 to 200, which is fairly sharp, is worth the money any day.
Yeah, just, I mean, the thing to look for is the variance, isn't it? If you've got a 28 to 300, you're going to get a lot softer at the end of the focus because it's struggling to deal with that expanse of focal length.
Yeah. But, yeah, the answer is they're telling you the truth.
Yes. They haven't ripped you off, mate. Don't worry. Have you got a cool thingy for us, Alex?
Yes, I don't call it a cheap thingy, seeing as the cool thingy is a different program.
Cheap thingy, that's right. Sorry.
No, it's quite
okay. I'll edit.
Okay, edit. Right, this one's really cheap because it's free. It was just something that I was playing with the other day, and it just occurred to me, I wanted to take a picture of some stuff in the garden, and I couldn't be bothered to get a tripod, and I was just balancing it on things and playing silly games, trying to get the camera to sit where I wanted.
It was far longer than if you'd have gone inside and picked up a tripod.
At least 100 times longer, at least.
But nowhere near as much fun.
Exactly. But what I came up with, and it worked, is I built myself, I found 3 twigs on the floor, they were quite long twigs, and I made myself a little teepee frame, you know, a 3-pronged frame. And there was some garden twine, so I just tied it together. And I left, it was actually about 4 inches on top. I actually took off my t-shirt, but that's just because I'm so manly. And I stuffed it into the gap, and I made a really, really rigid tripod. It was really, really, I really put a lot of weight on it to see if it went, and it didn't move anywhere. And with the material from my t-shirt inside, I nestled my camera really tight and comfortably in there, and it made a really, really strong, that camera wasn't going anywhere.
The chat room has christened it already the Twig Pod, mate.
There you go.
I think we got the title of the show as well. Thank you, Tone. The Twig Pod.
It worked, and it worked really, really, really well.
Fox Industries Twig Pod.
I don't think I haven't invented it, because over the years other people have probably done something very similar, but they haven't had the foresight to announce it publicly with some very intelligent people in the chat room to give it a proper name.
I've got the I'm just writing it down so I don't forget it. Fox Industries Twig Pod. There you go. Title of the show today. Perfect.
But it does work, and you're in the forest with your kids and you want to take a picture of the whole family and you want to do it on timer exposure, etc., etc., etc. Build yourself a twig pod.
Don't suggesting that you patent or trademark the name immediately.
I'll do
just
that.
In case.
When we're finished, I'll get on with it. Does it have a standard screw attachment?
Dave wants to know about the screw attachment, whether that's a standard or not.
It depends who you're in the forest with, I suppose.
3/8 or 1/4. My cheap thingy is an instant softbox, and you're going to have to ruin a piece of Tupperware for this, but there's a pound shop over the road from us, and you can literally get big Tupperwares for a pound and lots of different shapes. The one that I've got is, I've got a jug here that I'm showing on the video, so if you're on the audio, bad luck, but it's a long thin jug. And basically, you take the cap off here at the end, and you put your standard flash gun unit against the end, draw around it, and then cut an H slot where you want it to be, and shove it through so that it grips as you push it in. Then take some silver foil and mask off the inside of part or half of the Tupperware, and then marry the two back up together again, and what you'll end up with is a diffuse softbox that's instant. The best things are, you know, those cereal box ones, the big ones. If you get one of those, A, you can get your hand in to put the silver paper on with a bit of spray mount or something, but buy them in white plastic if you can. You get a fantastic look. If you've got the semi-clear stuff like this, it's not quite so good. It doesn't diffuse so well. But get the white plastic Tupperware. It'll cost you a couple of quid from a shop, pound shop. And the thing is, the cheaper the Tupperware, the more likely it is to have an opaque coating or a semi-opaque coating that's going to give you a better effect on it. And you'll have an instant softbox. There you go.
And the fella that needed to take a picture of this person inside, if he used your softbox, he'd get a lovely shot between the person and the window.
There's the thought. There we go. Instant softbox. But you need an external camera. And you can get like an extending cord as well. That's really useful. So you can put it on the top of your DSLR and then mesh it through to the other ones. Another one of those occasions where cheapest is best. Thank you, Sarah. It's very kind. Right. If you want to ask us a question, then send it in. The questions are all yours. So if you want something that's a really technical answer, then send us a technical question. If you want something that's a really simple answer and stupid answer, keep them coming. The questions are yours, not ours. If we've only got one question, we'll only do one question. So send it to us at bageltechphoto@gmail.com and we'll answer your questions about photography. If you've got any suggestions for cheap thingies as well, you can have your cheap thingy on and maybe we'll give away a prize or something for the best cheap thingy. That'd be cool. Someone suggested running a photo competition, which I think we'll do through the summer. So maybe next month we'll start that off and you can send in pictures based on topics that we set for you and then we'll give away a prize each month. Yeah. Go on, Alex, what are you saying?
You can have a free twig pod.
That's the prize, a free twig pod as made by Fox Industries.
Exactly.
That'd be perfect. Last word goes to our sponsors, of course, which is UK2.net. We've lost over 2.5 terabytes of data off the server this month. It's gone a little bit mad. They've been good as gold. They haven't said a word. And then despite the fact that we've done that, I said, is there any chance we can start putting video on the server? And they said, yeah, all right. So they've let us put video on. So all of the videos, hopefully, are going to go up to iTunes this week or next week. Sarah doesn't know it yet, but I need her to make video pages for all of the main three panel shows. But she does now. There we go. And they're great. They're our sponsors. They're our hosts. If you go to them and you want a VPS server, then you can get a free month with us using the Bagel Tech, code. So you go to our website, there's our website, and if you go down to the bottom, you'll find a UK2 logo on there. Click on that, and that takes you through to their website. Then navigate through to VPS, and when you buy your VPS server, put in the code BAGELTECH in the offer coupon box, and you'll get 1 month free. And also, if you want content-aware services, the co-location services, then if you use the same thing, you'll get a free iPad 2 and your first month free, which is fantastic. That's just an incredible deal. So UK2.net, please go and use them. And even if you don't want to buy anything from them, please go to the homepage at the Bagel Tech News and click on the link, because just clicking on that link means that they'll carry on supporting us and we will stay on the air, because without them, we are absolutely stuffed. Please support UK2.net. And if you see them tweet out as well, follow them on Twitter and please retweet their tweets, because they could mean a huge amount to us in the future going forwards now that we're starting to do video as well. As thanks, UK2. We do appreciate it.
Okay, just to add that they've got their special Easter specials on at the moment, and you have a chance of winning an iPod 2 just by signing up to any of their hostings. So maybe now's a good time to have a look.
Sarah's just put in the chat room, so much for my weekend off. Sorry, girl. Right, where can we get a hold of you, Alex?
Alex G. Fox, Twittery thing.
Alex G. Fox. You can get me on Twitter at Ewan Rankin, and you can also go to look at and buy my services if you want at ewanrankin.co.uk. There you go. We're going to disappear now. Kyle will be back with us next week, keeping us firmly on the ground and keeping us away from the technical and sad stuff. And we'll be back next week. Have a good week. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.